Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's CANNA insider.com. Now here's your program. Today, we're going to hear from Amber Senner, founder of the Congo Club. The Congo Club is one of the few places that carry the Red Congolese, an heirloom strain of cannabis which provides an electrifying, thought-provoking, and optimistic high. We're going to hear more about that and also what Amber is doing with Breeze Distro, a distributor of high-quality cannabis products. Amber, welcome to Canna Insider.
Yeah, thanks for having me today. Really excited about our conversation.
Me too. Give us a sense of geography. Where are you sitting today?
I am in Oakland, California right now.
Okay.
A bit chilly than it usually is. It's 48 degrees.
Oh, okay. That is pretty chilly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 35 this morning when I woke up. Like, oh my gosh, this is not what I moved to California for.
So tell us, what is the Congo Club and Breeze Distro?
Yeah, so the Congo Club is a cannabis brand, a brand of African landrace sativa genetics. We're dedicated to really bringing some of the highest quality, really African cultivars that we find, as well as crosses that we make. So bringing those, as you mentioned, electrifying type of sativas to the market, which there's a gap because people don't really want to dedicate that all that time that goes into growing sativas. So that's what we do with the Congo Club and Breeze Distro. So Breeze is about creating inclusive supply chains for black and brown cannabis brands. So we source the highest quality, really black and brown cannabis brands and products throughout the state, and make sure that they're have visibility on retail shelves.
Okay. And can you share a little bit about your background and journey and how you got into the cannabis space and got and started the Congo Club and Breeze Distro?
Yeah, sure. So I moved to California from Chicago in February of 2014. Moved out here and got a job working for an edibles company. I moved here because I was suffering from lupus, and those winters in California are extremely harsh.
You mean the winters in Chicago are harsh?
Chicago is what I meant. Yeah. We were experiencing one of those polar vortex winters.
Oh my gosh. Where it was like, that sounds like something that's made up in like a comic book movie or something.
Right. Yeah. The day after tomorrow type stuff, you know? But, that winter, we had wind chills of like 40, 50 below zero, and I just couldn't take it anymore. So I moved to California. I got a job working as a sales and marketing director for an edibles company, and worked very hard. At the time when I was brought on, we had 4 accounts. And by the time I left, we had over 50 accounts. So really hustled throughout the state to expand our business. But at the same time, I was also really building up my network. And that's how I got to meet so many people in cannabis. And really since then, I've just kind of been hustling, working. I had a job working for a consulting company, writing, winning applications for different groups throughout the state, really throughout the United States. And also worked for a little while at a West Oakland dispensary as a COO for a couple of years, and got my experience in running a multi-million dollar retail operation. And from there, my experience really at the dispensary taught me a lot about customers and customer trends and products, and really what what products do well in the dispensaries and what people are looking for. So after I left the dispensary, I started Breeze and manufacturing products, making products and distributing them.
Okay. And what do you think it is about this particular strain with the Congo Club? We talked about it being electrifying, thought-provoking, optimistic, high. But what is it that's really kind of captured people's imagination?
You know, it's a unique strain. It's spicy. It's cheesy. It's very clear-headed kind of high. But at the same time, there's no paranoia. So people really like that. You know, they some folks love Jack Herrera's and the Train Wrecks and those types of cultivars, but those tend to be really get your heart rate going, you know, kind of maybe give you heart palpitations. I know it does that for me, and I'm very sensitive to cultivars and things like that. I can't, any kind of stimulant whatsoever, you know, I can't even drink coffee, but I would really love to enjoy the buzz and the kick that you get from those kinds of things. So that's really what's very unique about the Congo, the Red Congo, is that you get that energetic feeling without the jitteriness and the heart palpitations. And that's really due to the myrcene content.
Yeah. Talk about the myrcene a little bit. People don't really understand. Well, could you just mention what myrcene is first?
Yeah, sure. It's a terpene that's found in cannabis, a number of different cannabis strains, primarily found in indica dominant strains. So strains that are really relaxing. It's more of a sedative type of property that's found in cannabis. It's found in a number of different plants, thyme, mangoes, but at lemongrass, but also found in a number of cannabis strains, Granddaddy Perp, Blue Dream. So yeah, you know, OG Kush also has a pretty high myrcene content. So not very common that it's found in sativa type of strains.
Hmm. So it's really a calming. It really tempers that paranoia and heart palpitations, which who doesn't want that on a Saturday night? Extreme paranoia and heart palpitations. So it's heavy in myrcene, and that kind of tempers that. It offsets it, so you get a more pleasant high without those things.
Yes. Yes.
Great. And how did you get, you know, I'm always curious how people get their product into dispensaries the first time, and then how do they kind of grow the network of dispensaries that create kind of demand for your brand?
Yeah, you know, that wasn't the easiest thing. In particular, for it's also a very big challenge for really black and brown brands to get shelf space. We just don't really have the networks a lot of times, the connections. And can't make that connection to get on the shelves. So we got our first big break with the Congo Club through Harborside. So Harborside has carried the Red Congolese for a very long time. And they actually worked with our cultivator. And once our cultivator got licensed, he was really trying to figure out his way and just wanted to focus on growing. And so we partnered up, and you know, he'd known me before. I had helped him with a previous brand that he was associated with. And so we were really looking to continue to build a relationship together. And so I had an idea of creating a brand that centered African genetics and African cultivars. And he loved the idea. And so we partnered up together, and we approached Harborside and, you know, had a meeting, let them know what we were up to and what this new brand was focused and represented, and they loved it. So they brought it on, and they've really been in our corner ever since then. And the market share and visibility that we got from Harborside just really reverberated across the California cannabis scene to other places. And now we're in a serious demand really across the state. So Harborside was really where we got our first big jump off.
So it's the kind of sales and marketing background that you had when you first came to California. It sounds like you leveraged that skill set to kind of get meetings and things like that.
Absolutely. Definitely.
I think people underestimate the Midwestern hustle. I've got the Midwestern hustle too. We're like, you know, silently just going at it, and it's underestimated, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have a very, very strong work ethic in the Midwest. Yeah. Very blue collar, just get it done. And yeah, I definitely applied that out here.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. And so with the large unregulated market side by side with the regulated and tax market, I know different communities are being served here, but how does that kind of, when you have that lens on, you're looking at the landscape of California's cannabis market and you're saying, hey, there's an unregulated market and they don't get taxed. They don't have the same regulations. They don't have all these lab tests they have to pass, all these things. And then I'm involved in the regulated taxed market. Do you just accept it, or are you looking for ways to, you know, get Sacramento to be more adaptive in how they deal with the regulated market? I mean, what are your general thoughts here?
Well, you know, it would be great if we had less taxes, obviously. You know, taxes are killing regulated operators. It's quite extremely burdensome, really hard to navigate, really hard to deal with, especially here in Oakland. We have some of the highest cannabis tax rates in the state, if not the highest. I believe we are actually the highest at 10%, which is unbelievable for a city tax on top of all the other taxes. So, we've been working really hard to advocate for lower taxes at both the city level and at the state level. We were successful at the city level here, the tax rate has been lowered and will continue to go lower over the next couple of years from 10% down to, it's all dependent on revenue and also your status if you're an equity operator or not. But equity operators pay as little as 0.12% city tax.
What's that for people that don't know what an equity operator is?
Oh, yes. So social equity programs were designed to lower barriers of entry for communities that have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs. And there's parameters that you have to qualify for in order to qualify for this program. But when you do, there's a number of different incentives and I guess different types of breaks and programs that you're able to be involved in. So one is a special kind of tax program for social equity operators here in Oakland, where if they generate $1.5 million in revenue or less, they're put in a special tax break, special tax bracket of 0.12%, which is quite different from 10%. And, it's there to help people create a sustainable business, you know, give them some kind of runway to allow them to get on their feet and generate some revenue. So, I think these types of programs are actually what would be quite helpful in helping folks transition from the unregulated market to the regulated market. You know, a lot of the unregulated operators and traditional market operators don't want to cross over because of the taxes. And I can't say that I blame them, because taxes make it really hard to run a sustainable business. So I think, you know, the state looking at programs like that, which Oakland has implemented, would be the way to go about it versus, enforcement. Like we can't we can't do enforcement. We've got to figure out pathways in which to get folks licensed.
Yeah. Amber, yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing with Equity Works Incubator, what that is and what you have going on there?
Yeah, sure. So Equity Works Incubator is a publicly funded shared social equity manufacturing facility located here in Oakland. It is first of its kind in the country. And what we do is we help social equity operators. We currently have six in the incubator. We help them create products really that make sense for the market, for the cannabis market. So we're doing things like analyzing data, where we're helping folks come up with formulations, helping them do R&D, we're helping them look at branding, helping them create and build their brand and create a brand story. And then we are, me as a distributor, we're distributing it to retailers throughout the state. So it's really very much a mentorship program, helping people from concept to the shelf.
Yeah, that is super helpful. So you said there's six startups in there right now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta imagine, you know, just getting some words of wisdom like this doesn't work and this does work. You know, you just don't know when you're getting started. And it's like, yeah, I'll tell you why. And it's like, wow, that just saved me like months of banging my head against the wall.
Right. You know, especially as a manufacturer, like getting into these products and making a product that might be off compliance wise, or the dosing's not right, you know, the formulation's not right. That's costly. Not only is it costing you money by going and getting these things tested, but it's costing you time.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that we're able to assist operators like this, really, you know, just bringing in our knowledge, our backgrounds, our experience, and helping folks kind of mitigate some of these pitfalls.
Yeah. And so you make introductions then for distribution. And I imagine these alumni, once they're alumni, will probably help each other too.
Yes, that is the goal, you know, is once you make it, you reach back and you help others that were in the position that you were in. Yeah. But we definitely not just make introductions, we're actually distributing these products. And we're doing it to some of the largest retailers in the state, you know, MedMen, Ease, Harborside, like really the big guys.
Wow. That's great. And of the six startups, how does it kind of break down and what they're interested in making, like specifically product-wise? Are they still kind of working that out?
Yeah, they're still kind of working it out, but a lot of them have their concepts created, and it's been really exciting to be a part and watch, you know, and give feedback. So we've got folks, you know, making gummies and really also bringing in their cultural backgrounds, influencing the flavor profiles of the products, and really also even the choices of the products. So we've got some folks making gummies. We've got some folks making tinctures, topicals, some interesting topicals too. One of our manufacturers is making a hair oil, but very specific to coarse hair. So, you know, black hair, certain Afro-Latina hair. So really, really interesting stuff coming out of there. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what else folks come up with. Someone's got a hibiscus type of lemonade. So
nice.
Yeah, really exciting things coming out.
So there's a lot of different kinds of licenses in California. People in California are familiar with it, but can you just kind of go through a few of the licenses of the big kinds? Because it's quite a few compared to other states anyway.
Yeah, there's, let's see, you've got a number of different cultivation licenses. You know, there's indoor cultivation, there's outdoor cultivation, there's even mixed light cultivation, greenhouse cultivation. So all different types of cultivation licenses. And then you've got your distributor licenses, which there's even different kinds there. There's a transport only license where you're just literally kind of logistics and moving things around the supply chain by transport. There's kind of overall arching distribution license where you can distribute your own products and other people's products and actually take them to the retailer. You also serve as the quality assurance by being the one that's in charge of collecting the taxes and testing. I feel like a lot of liability kind of falls on distributors. And then there is the self-distribution license. And then there's a few different types of processing, or we call it here manufacturing licenses. There's a type 6 license, which is non-volatile. There's a type 7, which is volatile. And then there are a few others that are very specific. There's a packaging license. There's an infusion license. So really, really interesting there. And then, of course, you've got your testing license and then your retail licenses, which there's a few categories there. Your storefront and your non-storefront, which would be delivery licenses.
What do you think here? Should some of these be consolidated, or do you think it's helpful having it fragmented like this?
You know, tricky question. You know, I was operational prior to legalization. So I was a manufacturer that self-distributed my own products. And since legalization, you know, I've had to, obviously I'm a manufacturer, but then now I've taken it a step further and had to get my distribution license. And I did like the way it was before, where manufacturers and cultivators could go straight to retailers to sell products and just really just kind of do business however they wanted. But now with the framework, it does make it a lot more costly, because now not only do we have the taxes and everything to deal with, we've got all these licensing fees and different licenses that we have to have. And then, of course, the cost of compliance around each of these licenses. So it's made it quite burdensome with all these different license types and the hoops that we have to jump through to stay compliant.
Yeah. Well, in California right now, there's a lot of roll up of the industry. There's, you know, a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on. What do you think about that? And can social equity companies participate in that?
Yeah. So, you know, M&A activity is high right now, right? All over the industry, especially here in California. The cost of compliance has been a lot, and people are seeing this looming, hopefully, descheduling that's going to be happening in the next few years. So folks are starting to prepare for that, you know, and kind of coming together like Voltron, right? It is one of the ways in which to really get a leg up on the flood of capital that's going to happen when some sort of descheduling happens. So, I think the mergers and acquisitions are great. You know, I think they make a lot of sense. I'm really glad to see people coming together because they're realizing that they can't get as big as they want to on their own. And they've got to consolidate in order to really have a presence and make an impact and gain market share. But, you know, there is a group that's being left out. And that is social equity operators. And it's a huge problem because we're seeing all of these companies around us being able to come together and join much and form much bigger entities, whereas the social equity operators are forced to stay small. And really, how can they compete against companies that are merging when they don't have that option? And that's something really that the regulators are going to have to fix as quickly as possible. I mean,
are they getting feedback on that, or are they not in touch with it?
Oh yeah. We've been giving them quite a bit of feedback, but really we've been giving them feedback since they came out with kind of the rules and regulations around which ownership is defined in social equity businesses, you know, and this has been a looming problem. And now that the M&A activity is really up, it's becoming amplified. You know, a lot of these smaller operators would, that's what you do. You come together so you can be bigger, you know, and the fact that that's being blocked because, you know, the definition of a social equity business is compromised at that point is just not okay. You know, that it's really limiting. It's limiting the ability of these businesses to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how do you see the California cannabis landscape changing the next 3 to 5 years?
That's a great question. I see the M&A activity continuing. I see a flood of capital coming in, hopefully from descheduling. I see if interstate commerce becomes a thing, which hopefully it will, I see California cannabis being king as it has been and will continue to be. And really, California being, which it kind of already is, this jewel in the United States, but that just being amplified with interstate commerce, you know? So I'm really excited to see what's in store for California. We continue to be trendsetters here with products and infusion techniques and all these things. And I see us continuing to be that leader, not just in the United States, but in the world. And very excited to see what's to come here in the cannabis scene in the next 5 years.
Yeah, me too. Amber, I want to move to some personal development questions to help the listeners get a better sense of who you are personally. With that, is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or your way of thinking that you'd like to share?
Definitely. You know, I don't get a whole lot of time to read for pleasure, I should say. A lot of my reading is professional development, personal development. So I went to school to be a meteorologist. I went to school for physics. Okay. And so, you know, now I'm business role. And so I really needed to step my game up there. And I read a book called The Personal MBA. It's lengthy, but so worth it. I read it several years ago, you know, 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But this book helped me out tremendously on the business side of things and really helped me with my crash course in business school. Navigating running a business in cannabis.
Okay. What do you think the most interesting thing going on in the cannabis field, apart from what you're doing?
You know, social equity programs have been really fascinating. I'm so glad that it's a topic of conversation, you know, because it deserves to be. Like, we have to give opportunities to those that that came before us and really paved the way for this to be an industry as it is today. So I really appreciate what has happened around that. And also, I'm really fascinated about beverages in the beverage category. You know, I was always very skeptical, being an operator that operated since 2015, 2014. Like, I've always really been like, oh, drinks. No, I don't know about that. But really the technology around it, the bioavailability that they've been able to really create with and absorption rates with beverages and edibles even has been so interesting, where we can really now create these fast onsets instead of waiting, you know, an hour for an edible to kick in. It kicks in 15 minutes, you know, and the buzz is short-lived but strong. Like, this has been fascinating to me. So I'm really, really excited to see how far the envelope gets pushed there, you know, like how much they can tweak it. It's, yeah, so very, very exciting to me.
In fact, it was the drink manufacturer that introduced us, Luke from Can.
Yes.
Those are very popular, Luke. Well done, if you're listening.
Yeah, I love Luke. Luke is an incredible human being and a really awesome person. And he's made an amazing beverage and it's awesome branding. I just love it. Everything about it.
Luke, you can just record that and put it on loop whenever you're feeling down. All right, Amber, what one song immediately comes to mind that makes you sing along as soon as you hear it?
You know, this is a funny question. Most of the music I listen to is rap. Well, lots of rap and hip hop. And so very much not safe for work, right? That's my answer. A lot of my the music that I love, not safe for work, but okay. One of my favorite artists did win a Grammy on Sunday night, Megan Thee Stallion.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Amber, as we close, can you tell listeners how they can follow you and connect online and learn about all the different businesses and projects you're a part of?
Yeah, definitely. You can actually go to my website, AmberEcenter.com. You can find Breeze Distro on the web as well at breezedistro.com. You can find us on Instagram as well, or look me up on LinkedIn.
Great. Well, Amber, best of luck to you. You got a lot of exciting things going on, and I hope we can check in again soon.
Yes. Thank you so much, Matt. Thanks for having me on today. Really enjoyed this conversation.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments. Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider. Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.